It's time for our regular segment, Legally Speaking, with Michael Mulligan, barrister and solicitor with Mulligan Defense Lawyers. Morning, Michael. How are we doing?
Hey, good morning. I'm doing great. Always good to be here.
A story right up at the top of the news. It's all everybody's talking about. It's an issue you and I have discussed any number of times. It's exasperating for ordinary persons on the outside of the system looking in, seeing seeming but not necessarily proven outcomes like this, the issue of the carjacking. What are your thoughts on all this, or the alleged carjacking?
Sure. Well, obviously, a very upsetting and terrifying event for the people that were involved in it. There's just no doubt about that. No getting around it. It is, I think, important to have some context, though, in terms of how the system works. And I do have some insight with publicly available information about the particular case that may help people understand how it is we got here, because without the explanation, it seems sort of ponderous, right?
Yeah.
How could there be three things from somebody in 3 days? And the first thing to bear in mind, and most people just fundamentally know this, right? We have a presumption of innocence in the criminal justice system, right? We don't presume people to be guilty, right? We don't assume that somebody did something and start punishing them on day one and only wait until later to see whether that's been proven or not, right? The presumption of innocence would ring pretty hollow if somebody accuses you of something and you just go straight to jail and we start punishing you, right? We wouldn't want to live in that society.
No.
And so that's really the starting point, right? And so when somebody's arrested, when the police arrest somebody, the threshold for doing that is if the police have reasonable grounds to believe that somebody's committed a criminal offense, they can arrest them, right? It doesn't mean they necessarily did it. Not everyone who's arrested is guilty or guilty of the thing for which they were arrested, right? And that's another thing long experience teaches us.
Yeah.
And so when somebody's arrested, one of the things the police are required to consider is what they should do with the person. Should they have the person, should they ask the Crown to seek the person's detention, or should they decide to release the person with a court date and conditions? And most cases, including this case, was a circumstance where this fellow was arrested on the first occasion for allegedly stealing a car.
Hmm.
And the police decided to release him.
Hmm.
They didn't seek his detention. He wasn't brought in front of a judge, or the Crown wasn't assessing any of that. And that's not terribly surprising, given one of the other things which is unusual about this case. The fellow has an unusual name. And so I was able to do a search of a database that shows outstanding criminal cases in British Columbia,
hmm.
and indeed previous cases where somebody was convicted of something. And one of the really interesting things is this man has nothing else.
Oh.
And that's unusual.
It is.
Right? Most people that are going off and stealing a car don't sort of live their entire life and then just one day snap and go and do something. So something unusual is going on here.
Yeah.
And the database isn't perfect. There could be something from some other province. That's possible, right? So you don't need to wait and see. But
mm-hmm.
usually somebody who's doing this sort of thing is going to have had some kind of history. And this man apparently had none. And so if you're the police officer and you have somebody you've arrested and you believe they've stolen a car, you then have to turn your mind to, well, in what circumstances might a person who's presumed to be innocent be kept in jail waiting for their trial, right?
Yes.
And the trial is not going to be next week. That might be 6 months from now, right? We don't have a bunch of judges sitting around on their hands. The courtrooms are full, right?
Yes.
You need a judge and a courtroom, sheriffs and court clerks and Crown, all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like if you're charged your trials next week, it might be 6 months down the road. And so the assessment would have to be by the police officer, is there a basis to have this person who's presumed to be innocent kept in jail for, let's say, 6 months waiting for the trial about whether they tried to steal a car?
Hmm.
Well, the considerations would be things including, what are the circumstances that we might keep somebody we presume to be innocent in prison? And really, there are three circumstances in which we do that. These are considerations on bail. First of all, if it's determined that it's necessary to keep the person in jail waiting for their trial before they've been convicted of anything, in order to make sure they're going to show up, right? That's called the primary ground. We need the person to be there, right?
Yeah.
And the sort of things that you would look at when deciding do you need to keep them in jail waiting for their trial would include things like, do they have any previous history of not showing up? Obviously, that's pretty compelling, right? Yeah. If they didn't show up last time, that's going to be a pretty compelling argument they won't show up this time. Well, if you have a man with no record and no history of failing to show up, unless there's something that would point to the fact that, you know, point to the direction this person's going to take off and we'll never see them again, you know, that's not going to really apply, right? You would look at other things like, does the person have an address? Do they have ties to the community? Do they have employment? You know, how serious is the charge, right? Somebody who's charged with murder, you might say, oh, they might flee. They're facing life in jail, right?
Yes.
But car theft for somebody with no record, probably not.
Hmm.
And then the second criteria is you could detain the person if it is necessary to protect the public, yes, bearing in mind various things, like a witness or prevent interference with the administration of justice, right? But, you know, public safety, basically. But the analysis of that, just like that first ground, has to be analyzed from the perspective of not, well, if you just let the person go and say, please come back, how's that going to work out? You have to analyze it from the perspective, bearing in mind that both the police, when they choose to release somebody, or a judge if they release them, can put the person on conditions, right?
Yes.
Report to a bail supervisor, don't have weapons, or don't possess drugs, or live at this address, or whatever they think would be appropriate. And so you have to ask yourself, is it necessary to keep the person in jail for, let's say, 6 months waiting for their trial? You know, is there no way to ameliorate whatever public safety concerns there might be by putting the person on conditions? And they could be all the way up to things like house arrest, right? You can't go out with an electronic monitoring bracelet on you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, again, for somebody who's charged with stealing a car who has no previous history, it's going to be pretty tough to come to the conclusion, yes, to keep the public safe from car theft, we need to keep the person in prison for 6 months. That's not going to happen, probably, right? And then the third circumstance in which you can detain a presumed innocent person for months is called the tertiary ground. And that one applies if it's necessary to maintain confidence in the administration of justice. Well, what does that mean? That could apply in serious cases. Like, here's a fact pattern. Let's imagine a mayor is caught on video murdering their spouse, right?
Yeah.
And so you've got a very compelling case, very strong case, very serious charge, very clear evidence. We've got it on videotape, right?
Yeah.
But if you analyze it, do we need to keep them in jail to attend court? Probably not. They're the mayor. We probably know where they live. Everyone knows what they look like. That's not going to apply. Well, do you need to do it to protect the public? Probably not. It was some kind of a domestic dispute with the spouse. The spouse was already dead. Is there anyone else at risk? Probably not. But in that kind of a case, you can still say, well, we just need to detain the person. The case is overwhelming. I appreciate they're not running away. And I appreciate nobody else is in jeopardy. This was a one-off dispute over something, right? But you can still have the person detained in that kind of a case under the tertiary ground. So that's the universe in which we detain people, even though we presume to be them to be innocent. And that's why we detain them. We've got to make sure they show up. We've got to keep the public safe. And in those kind of cases, sometimes it's necessary, even if those other two issues are addressed. And so with all that background, when this man was first arrested for the car theft, the police released him, as you would sort of expect.
Hmm.
They released him clearly on an undertaking. And that's apparent when you guys can look up and see what the charges are subsequent to that. And an undertaking are conditions that the police decided to impose, right?
Okay.
And they could be all kinds of things, like reporting to a bail supervisor or not being in any car without the owner, or whatever, you know, the whole list of things they might impose. So they chose to release him, which is not surprising, given that he has no record and there's no basis, apparently, to conclude he's not going to show up in court. So out he goes. He then gets arrested the next day, right?
Yes.
He's alleged to have stolen two cars, right? One car escaped and then accident getting into another car, right? And so he's arrested again. Now, that's a much more challenging circumstance from a bail perspective, right? Because the guy was released the day before.
Yes.
And so the police did not, in this case, just release him again. They didn't make the decision to release him as they did on the first occasion, right?
Okay.
Instead, they had him taken to the courthouse, and they would have prepared a report for Crown, who would then have to make a decision about whether, bearing in mind the things we've just talked about,
yes,
would those criteria be made out? And it's not clear whether ultimately there was an agreement to release him or whether a judge made the decision to release him. That's unclear on the information we have so far. But and so what often happens is the Crown would get the police report. They would look at the person. They look at the person's circumstances, background, previous history, seriousness of the offense. And they would make a judgment call about what's to be done. Sometimes the Crown would say, look, we'll agree to the person's release, but only if, let's say, they have a surety and they have strict conditions or they're on monitoring or whatever it might be. Hmm. Other times the Crown might say, we're just going to ask the judge to detain the person. Then a judge would have to decide whether it's necessary to detain the person. Now, as I said, it's a much harder call, and in this case, the wrong one, right? Hmm. Ultimately, to release him. We know that because we know there was another allegation of breaking into a house and stealing a wallet the next day. So we know it was the wrong call, ultimately. But that doesn't mean it was the legally wrong decision at the time. And it's a very tough job, I should say, for whoever is doing that. Because just think about it. You've got dozens of people and you have to make a decision. You can't hold everyone in jail waiting for their trial. The prisons would pop open, right? On about week two, that's just not possible, right? Mm. You cannot just, if the justice system operated on the basis of, you know, everyone charged with stealing a car is going to remain in jail for 6 months while we wait for their trial, we would have thousands of people, not just for car theft, but shoplifting and car theft and all kinds of things. The jail would pop open in about 2 weeks. We just can't do it. We do not have anywhere near the space to do that. And frankly, we wouldn't want to live in a society where anyone charged with anything is just held for months waiting for their trial. It just wouldn't be fair. How does that compute with we're presuming somebody to be innocent? But it's a difficult decision to try to figure out who's who in the zoo here. I mean, just imagine that. It's easy to say in retrospect, as we know the guy is allegedly done something else when he got out again. So we can all see it now. Hmm. But put yourself in the position of the person who's, okay, you've got this man with no previous criminal record. He is alleged to have stolen a car. And then alleged to have stolen another car and failed to stop. Pretty serious, right? Mm. But it's not a case where you look at it and say, oh, what fool could come to this conclusion, right? It's just not. And the other thing you have to remember with these is bail is not used to punish people or rehabilitate people. No. And that's not some change in the law. That's just fundamental to we presume people to be innocent, and you have a constitutional right not to be denied reasonable bail without just cause. That's just the way it is in Canada. We live in a free and democratic society. You don't use bail to just punish somebody and, you know, anxiously get on with that right now. We don't want to wait for a trial. That's not how we do it, nor do we want to live in a place where that's so. But, you know, these are difficult decisions. Clearly, at the end of the day, it's unclear who made the decision, but it turned out not to be correct. Hmm. But that doesn't mean that's a sign that there's some ship of fools making decisions that make no rational sense, right? You know, bearing in mind things like, apparently, you've got this person, and this is another interesting thing. There was a news reporter interviewed the woman who had her car stolen.
Yeah.
And her description, and here's the description to give you an idea, right? As I approached the back of my vehicle, I saw a guy, a normal-looking young guy, approach me. And the person got in the car and took off with it. And so you can imagine all the things involved there. Well, the description is a normal-looking young guy. Well, let's hope it's the right guy that we found later. Right,
because yeah. There's always a chance that it wasn't one person involved in all three, and we have to maintain that possibility throughout the process.
That's right. And so you've got, you know, a person with no record who's alleged to have stolen a car, and the judgment call would be, is this one of the cases where we need to, despite the fact we're presuming him to be innocent, and despite the fact you may be sitting there for 6 months waiting for your trial, is this the person that needs to be detained in that way? That's the judgment call, right? And it's not perfect. It's a human process, and it involves some assessment of is this the fact pattern? This would be something which would be, frankly, concerning, because there was something the day before, something oddball is going on here, right? Assuming the person did these things.
Yeah.
But it's not a case which would be screaming out for, you know, who could possibly come to this conclusion, right? You know, if you had somebody with a previous record or some history of failing to show up or some history of doing these things, you might have a different assessment of it. I'm sure you would, right? But on day two, you're the person faced with, well, he's alleged to have stolen a car, and then there's an allegation of doing these things the following day. Do you detain him? That's the judgment call. And clearly, as I said, it turned out to be the wrong call. It did, right?
Yes.
But that's not to say it was a foolish call or an unreasonable decision at the time. It just wasn't. On the information we have at this point, just keep an open mind to all of it, right? Again, we don't know how that call was made or whether there's some information we're not aware of. But here we are. And so naturally, when the fellow was arrested again, the result is he's in custody. He's probably no reasonable prospect the fellow's getting released. And that's a an unusual thing in the sense that we don't usually hold people who we presume to be innocent in jail for months and months waiting for their trial.
No.
But it's a balancing, and sometimes that's just necessary, right? You say, look, there's just no conditions we can impose here that will keep people safe, or there's no condition we can impose that will make sure the person shows up. And so, yes, I appreciate that as a matter of principle, he's presumed to be innocent, but, there's just nothing else we can do to make sure people are safe. And so, sorry, sir, I appreciate you may not have done this. So that may be the determination 6 months from now, but you're just going to have to wait in jail while we sort that out. And that's likely where the person is. That's likely what's going to occur here.
May 14th their record is the next day, I think.
Adjourned.
Yeah. Del Mannix says
but imagine that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's overwhelmingly likely.
Okay.
But that's the history of this one. We'll have to keep a careful eye on it. But, I said it's usually helpful for knowing why things happened and how the police made their decision and how the second decision about release was made. We know it was a mistake now, but it's not so clear. That wouldn't have been so clear if you were asked to try to determine that then. So we need to bear that all in mind.
In terms of records in other provinces, Crown can check that, right? Or do we have a database that spans the whole country where somebody in the justice system can look and see if somebody's accused of something or did something in another province?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So we have a national database. It's called CPIC. It'll contain criminal convictions and outstanding charges all across the country, and it's supported by fingerprints.
Okay.
We have another system in BC, CSO Online. People can go and check that. You can put in a name and you can see, does this person have, and it shows things like outstanding charges, things people were convicted of. You can look it up and see what the charges were, when the case is in court, and what's going on. Sometimes there's even information there that wouldn't be on the national one. So it's in many respects more detailed and more comprehensive in British Columbia.
Hmm.
And again, there could be something somewhere else we don't know about, but it's a really notable thing that this person apparently has nothing prior to any of this. So something odd is going on here, whether it's a mental breakdown or mental illness or drug addiction or some combination of those things, assuming again he did these things. It's remarkable that you would have somebody who would go through years and years of their life with nothing and then suddenly launch into doing a whole rash of things over a 3-day period.
Yeah.
That's not usually the case. Usually people continue to kind of behave the way they behaved before. You don't have a lot of, 60-year-olds who go through their life not having done anything and then, break into a rash of crime one weekend. That's not typically how the world works. And so that's just a notable thing here. The description of him is also notable as well. Normal looking young guy. So the description is not drug addled person, dragging their leg behind them and, you figure out what's going on. So you've got a normal looking young guy with no previous criminal record and no other charges outstanding who's alleged to have committed these crimes over a 3-day period. So that's unusual. We'll have to keep an eye on it. And no doubt that background and lack of history would have played into the decision to choose to release him on the second occasion. And again, it's unclear who made the decision as between Crown and the judge on that occasion. It's clear the police decided to release him on the first occasion,
but not
again,
the
not
second.
Surprisingly.
Okay.
But not the second. That's
okay.
Correct.
All right. We need to take a break. Michael Mulligan with Mulligan Defense Lawyers. We're back right after this. All right. We're back on the air here at CFAX 1070. We have 3 minutes and 15 seconds left in our segment today. Michael, what shall we discuss?
Sure. I think probably there was an interesting appeal decision that just came out, a case out of Vancouver, and it was a former RCMP officer who was charged there with multiple counts of exposing himself to a person under the age of 16, a problematic and troublesome fact pattern alleged that the officer off-duty and would driving home in an SUV and repeatedly would pull up to young girls wearing school uniforms and allegedly masturbate in his car while looking at them. It prompted then a undercover operation with another police officer dressing up as a school student who managed to make some observations but could not see the person's face, although the person did engage in that behavior when seeing her. And that officer, the undercover one, got 3 digits of the license plate. Ultimately, the case was an interesting one. It relied on evidence, including CCTV footage of the officer leaving the RCMP detachment. in a vehicle that was similar to the one observed, and evidence from an expert who worked for Rogers Cell Phones, who then got digital evidence about what cell sites this officer's cell phone was connected to at the time, and there was a correlation between the incidents and that.
Yeah.
And finally, some expert evidence matching up what the person, the car, looked like. One of the legal issues, and he was at a jury trial and was convicted, one of the legal issues was that the judge didn't give the instructions to the jury from a case called Regina versus DW, which is an instruction about how a jury is to deal with, or a judge should deal with, it's just a judge, evidence when an accused person testifies. If this officer testified and said, it wasn't me, I didn't do it. Obviously, the jury did not believe that. And that case involves an instruction that is intended to, in criminal cases, make sure that a judge or jury is not just weighing up whose evidence do they like better, or is the person probably guilty. And it sets out a process that a judge or jury should go through when assessing the evidence of an accused person who testifies, asking, do you believe them? Obviously, that's much more than a reasonable doubt. If not, might they be telling the truth, right? Because that's kind of what a reasonable doubt looks like. And then if not, that's not evidence of guilt. They have to go on and analyze whether they're satisfied of evidence they do accept. And again, pointing out that if there's a doubt, they must be found not guilty. The judge didn't do that. And that was one of the key issues on appeal. But the Court of Appeal concluded that the other instructions the judge did give would have been sufficient in this case because it wasn't a conflict between the school kids and the officer. It was just him saying, it wasn't me, I didn't do it. It was enough so that they weren't, the jury would not have been left the impression that they could convict based on thinking he was probably guilty or weighing up one witness versus another. And so that's the disturbing case of the RCMP officer who's convicted. The conviction was upheld on appeal. The same officer now is charged with impersonating a police officer in another occasion and a series of sexual offenses back in Ontario. Obviously a troubling fact pattern, but that's the latest from the BC Court of Appeal.
Michael Mulligan with Mulligan Defense Lawyers, legally speaking during the second half of our second hour every Thursday. Thank you, Michael. I really do appreciate the elaboration, especially on the first story.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure to be here.
All right. Bye now. All right. We'll take a quick break. Back after this.